Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Imagine this, spending 23 hours a day in a small, windowless cell with virtually no human contact, no external stimuli, and no sunlight. That's the reality for more than 80,000 U.S. prisoners currently being held in solitary confinement. While most other democratic nations have discontinued the practice, long-term solitary confinement is increasingly routine in American prisons. A series of new studies show that the psychological effects of such deprivation counters any goals of rehabilitation. Joseph Strongberg is a reporter and science blogger at Smithsonian Magazine who wrote about the science of solitary confinement for SmithsonianMag.org. Joseph, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much for having me on, Virginia.
Now, that number sounds very high, between 80 and 81,000 male and female inmates in solitary at any given time. Is that number on the rise?
You're right in saying that it's a huge amount, and it is on the rise. I think for researchers, one of the frustrating things is that there's no central piece of data that the U.S. government collects on solitary, because sometimes it's federal prisoners, sometimes it's state-level prisoners. But the best censuses do indicate that it's somewhere around 80 or 81,000. And it's a number that is increasing because prison administrators use solitary confinement for a few different reasons nowadays.
Well, why? Why would people end up in solitary?
The basic context is that our prison population is overall rising. But administrators use it for a few different reasons, use solitary for a few different reasons, I should say. There's the most basic one of disciplining prisoners, which is probably what most of us think of when we think about solitary. It's also used as a tool coercing prisoners into cooperating with different rules. Maybe cooperating with an ongoing police investigation or preventing them from talking to others during an investigation. It's even sometimes used at prisoners' own request if they feel there's a threat within the prison population to their safety as a preventative measure. And so based on the fact that the prison population itself is increasing and all these different uses for it, it's exploded over the past couple decades in the U.S.
So paint a picture for us of what solitary confinement is like, you know, the size of the cell, sun exposure, human exposure.
Yeah, it's probably hard for a lot of listeners to imagine living this way. The average cell is maybe 80 square feet on average. So that's like the size of a queen size bed. You won't have any exposure to sunlight. You might not have a window. So it's not the bars that most of us picture when we think of a prison cell, but rather just a steel door. And you're going to be in there at least 23 hours a day. You might have an exercise period either out in a prison yard or in an enclosed inside area. You won't have human contact. You won't have stimuli. A lot of solitary prisoners, even when they do receive visits from friends or family, they are prevented from touching them. And so I think one of the most really disturbing things to think about is that they might go years, if they're in solitary for years, they might go years without touching another person except for when guards are putting them in restraints.
So given that you're not touching anyone, you have no contact with others, what are some of the psychological effects of being in solitary confinement?
Yeah, the psychological effects are difficult to study because many prisons are resistant to letting researchers or academics inside. But Craig Haney, a psychologist at UC Santa Cruz, who have been able to gain access and conduct interviews with some prisoners, he's conducted interviews with 500 prisoners in solitary from four different states. And he's found that these prisoners have significantly higher rates of symptoms like dizziness, heart palpitations, chronic depression, hallucinations, suicidal thoughts, than the general prison population. And a study that actually came out last week found that isolated inmates in the New York State prison system are seven times more likely to hurt or kill themselves than the general inmate population.
So one of the things that really struck me is you cited some evidence that there are neurological implications of long-term isolation. What might those be?
Yeah. So like the psychology, the neuroscientific implications are even more difficult to study because there are no prisons that are allowing researchers to come in with MRI imagers or other types of technology and look at the brains of prisoners. So they really have to look at other types of models and their basic understandings about the principles of the brain. But those have, for one, there's the fact that so much of our brain activity is driven by circadian rhythms. So that's our body's natural clock that's set by the rising and the falling of the sun every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's easy to imagine that if you never saw the sun, your circadian rhythms would be interfered with. Other research has found that when people who have chronic depression for extended periods of time, the activity in their brains is less well aligned with their circadian rhythms. And there's been other work that shows people who are restricted access to the sun are more prone to depression. And so it's easy to imagine that if you don't see the sun any day for years in a row, you're much more likely to develop depression. And there's also other work that shows the hippocampus, which is an important brain structure involved in things like memory, cognition, decision-making. This can dramatically shrink over time in people who are depressed for extended periods. And so this might account for some of the evidence we have that people who spend long periods of time in isolation are perform worse on decision-making skills, their memory is not as sharp, and they, in general, appear to be less well-equipped to re-enter U.S. society at large.
Joseph Stromberg is reporter and science blogger at Smithsonian Magazine. He's been studying and looking over some of the studies on the science of solitary confinement. What happens when an inmate is held in solitary, psychologically, physiologically? And Joseph, you just got to something I was going to ask you about. Inmates can become increasingly violent. Their decision-making faculties are changed.
Mm-hmm.
What do those things mean in terms of rehabilitation, the goal of imprisoning them in the first place?
Yeah, I think the implications of this are disturbing. I think one interesting thing I'd like to mention is that this isn't all exactly news. The beginning of institutional solitary confinement was in the mid-1800s in the U.S. as part of something called the Pennsylvania model of imprisonment, and this was reformers who thought that to rehabilitate prisoners, they had to isolate them and allow them to get in touch with their own thoughts and connect with God. And even back then, administrators, prison governors realized that this was essentially driving many inmates insane and doing the opposite. And so that's exactly what we're seeing today as well.
Mm-hmm.
All evidence is that prisoners who have spent extended periods of time in solitary confinement are less well-equipped to enter society at large. And if that's one of the goals that we have for the prison system, solitary's failing at it.
And we hear a little bit of this firsthand from Robert King. He was on a panel at the American Association for the Advancement of Science's annual meeting in Chicago. He was confined in solitary in a Louisiana prison until his murder conviction was overturned in 2001. What did he talk about for the experience?
Robert King is now an activist and an author who's fighting against the culture of solitary confinement in the U.S. prison system. And he spoke about how he thinks he fared a lot better than many people who stayed in solitary. You know, he was always hopeful that his conviction would be rightly overturned. But at the same time, he spoke about really disturbing physical changes. His eyesight began failing him when he spent time in solitary, and he realized that he'd have to perform different types of eye exercises just because he was never asked to focus on anything further than about 6 feet away.
And how long was he confined?
He was confined for 29 years.
29 years?
Yeah, from 1972 through 2001. And yes, and like we said, the murder conviction was overturned. And so apart from his failing eyesight, he spoke about how since he's been reintroduced to the world at large, he has difficulty navigating large spaces. Navigation is actually a capacity that's tied to the hippocampus, that brain structure we spoke about that can shrink when people are depressed for long periods of time. And so he says he's no longer able to, you know, navigate a walk of 10 city blocks. That part of his brain simply wasn't called upon to navigate the world at large for such a long time that it's made that difficult for him.
So he's one activist, Robert King.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of, you know, attempted legislation and activism in the criminal justice system in general, but I'm
mm-hmm.
wondering if there is a legal case that can be made based on the Eighth Amendment prohibiting cruel and unusual punishment against solitary confinement.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility that a lot of researchers are looking into now, researchers and activists both. I think as the evidence builds about how solitary affects the brain and affects people's psychology, I think that might be an avenue that is pursued in the future.
Well, last Wednesday, New York State government reached a settlement banning the
mm-hmm.
use of extreme isolation
mm-hmm.
for juveniles and limiting it somewhat for adults. So do you think, Joseph, the tide may be turning?
I think that's hard to say. I think that it's important for us to at least begin analyzing how solitary affects people, because I think one of the remarkable things is that prison systems have been doing this without really looking at scientifically at the consequences of it for a very long time. And I think as researchers and psychologists and neuroscientists gather more information about it, it might prompt the tide to start turning. I think the New York State decision is a big one. I think that's one of the larger state prison systems, and up until now had one of the largest amounts of prisoners in solitary confinement. So it's a start.
Joseph Strongberg, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Joseph Strongberg is a reporter and science blogger at Smithsonian Magazine. You'll find a link to read his article for yourself. It's called The Science of Solitary Confinement. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org. Even those who are free to roam the world and the internet can lose their perspective when swayed by impossibly beautiful imagery. We'll take a closer look at some of the viral images, so well-crafted, people think they're the real thing.
One thing that might be obviously fake to one person could be completely plausible to another. So it really shows you that people want so desperately for something to be incredible.
That's when Word of Mouth continues.